I need to keep you focused.
Yeah, yeah. Keep me focused. Thanks. I had Mary McCord on. She was so unbelievably focused. I was like, I see why this works. You do. Problem is, I was saying to her, Andrew and I both have the same problem of staying on track. So like, thank God she's there with you. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Illegal News. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. And it's the best day because our good friend Andrew Weissman is back. Best-selling New York Times number one author. Hey, Andrew, congratulations on the book's success. I hope that the credit is to me and to, yeah, right? We've been pumping this book hard.
It's all you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for
acknowledging that. No, it really, it's a lot of people. It is hugely due to you and the Bulwark audience, which are readers.
They are readers and they love you.
It's great. And so thank you.
Just any fun as before we jump into the, because we do have a lot of illegal news to discuss. And it's been a little bit since we've been together and I got a bunch of questions for you, but do you have any good book stories?
I do. But just so people stay tuned, because some people are going to be like, I don't want to hear any stories. I don't want to hear any anecdotes. I've got a really quick story. But I know one of the things we're going to talk about is what that Todd Blanche confirmation hearing needs to cover. And I have an area where I really want your feedback, because I think there's an area where it's both legally, that it fits my legal world, and I want to, and I think it will fit the political world, at least the Congress political world, even if it doesn't resonate with the public. But okay, so I go to New York, and I've been on sabbatical in Europe, and I go to New York for the quote book tour. It's just like a 1 week whirlwind thing. And probably people are listening to this are like, Andrew, we know, cause we heard you a million frigging times on the book.
Yeah, we get it.
Yeah. And so I go to New York and I've got my one copy with me, because as you go on air and doing stuff, you need to have your copy, plus they might ask you, et cetera. So, you know, like, what's going on? So I arrive on Sunday and I'm going to leave on the following Sunday, and I've got my one copy, and it is Saturday night, and I'm on MS Now on the Saturday night show. And on Sunday, before I go to the airport, I am going to go to my mom's house. She's 93 years old. As people probably know, if they read this, she does have really severe dementia, but I still was going to give her this copy and hold her hand, et cetera. But I'm on MS Now, and one of the anchors says, oh, is that for me?
Oh, no.
And
you say, no, it's for my 93-year-old mother with dementia. Not you, Ali Velshi.
So I thought, well, it's fine. I'm going to just go get one tomorrow morning, Sunday. So I say, yep, here it is. It's like, yep, it's for you now. Yeah. And by the way, of course, when I was the balloon over my head was like, the publisher sent you some, like, you know, like, but anyway, I'm like, fine. Cause you know what? It's like, it's not like there are many copies. So Sunday morning I wake up, and I go to this lovely bookstore on Madison Avenue. That's just great. It's like exactly what you want an independent bookstore to do. We can't find it, and ask them about it. And he recognized me and he goes, well, congratulations, because your book's been selling well. We're sold out. And so he said, but you know what? Go to Barnes and Noble. It's, you know, it's on, you know, the Upper East Side, this address, it's like 87th Street. And so we walk there and I go there and I look at the, you know, new and nonfiction, and I'm looking and I'm like, this is really bad. They didn't put my book out. Like, I mean, I'm like, I still, you know, I'm humble enough that I was like, okay, but like, couldn't you just at least put it somewhere? So I'm like, okay. So I go and I ask them, saying like, you know, do you have it? And he's like, no, it's sold out. And I'm like, this is Barnes and Noble. Like Barnes and Noble is like, you know. So I'm like, well, do you have it anywhere nearby? So he looks in his computer and he says, we have one copy in Brooklyn.
Oh.
Like if the whole city, they have one copy.
What a flex this story is.
So, you know, it's great. And but so, you know, the one thing I will say that's, so of course I still see my mom, and the one thing, I have this wonderful publisher and they hand deliver one to her.
Yeah, that's nice.
Exactly. But anyway, that's a long way of saying thank you. It was like number one on the New York Times and the and Amazon and Publishers Weekly, and the audiobook did really well because apparently people, like, you know, they know because they listen to me. And leaving me aside, I do think that people want solutions.
Yeah.
People want, and what are we going to do about it? And like, it's like, it's enough complaining and moaning and belly aching. It's like, you know, put your big boy pants on and let's do something.
Yeah. And that's also why I wrote this book, of which I just got my first advanced
preview. Oh my God. Oh, that's so great.
All solutions oriented.
I love the title. And I have to tell you, I think
how to eat an elephant one boat at a time.
I do think the graphic artist who did that.
Isn't this cover sick? Oh, good.
It is a fantastic cover.
I will just say, just, I know people are kind of like, all right, guys, we get it. You wrote books or whatever. But I just say, Andrew's written two books. I've never written a book before. This is like a bucket list thing for me. I worked super hard on it and I'm desperate for it to get out because I am, we're the discourse that I was writing about in the book, you know, 8 months ago is now like upon us. And I feel really great about what I wrote because I feel like it really is holding up as things are happening, but also I'm sort of desperate to have it in the world to be able to discuss it concretely.
Exactly. There's a reason you write a book. I mean, these are not vanity projects. You're actually thinking, how is this going to move the dialogue and move the needle forward? And so, and then also on a selfish level, it's a lot of work. No matter, it is a surprising amount of work.
Also, guys, we don't write books for money. Like, that is not like the, that is true. The books. People who are like, yeah, well, they want to sell a lot of books. I'm like, oh, man, guys.
By the way, wait, it has nothing. Yet. Like, the publisher and the bookstores make money. They should. I mean, they're doing a service. Like, you know, you get an advance. That's it. Like, there's no additional.
That's right. The additional thing you get from like selling the book is all, it's for me, it is like, I would like people to, I have a very strong point of view that is from listening to voters for 8 years. And so it's a passion project and I want it to have influence and I want people to know the aggregate of listening to all of these voters for so long. Okay.
I think that ça suffit.
Yes. Which means, I forget what it means. I know it means.
It's enough. It means that's enough.
That's enough. Yeah.
Right. And by the way, you can only see sa fit.
but you knew the French.
We.
Speaking of, this is my favorite, one of my favorite clothing, I don't know, whatever, Claire V. And they've seen me wear their stuff on the podcast and they sent me the sweatshirt and that made me happy. Stop. Sorry.
Stop. All right, man. Because you know what? I still no swag, zero. Okay.
Someday.
What are we going to talk about? I need to keep you focused.
Yeah. Keep me focused. Thanks. I had Mary McCord on. She was so unbelievably focused. I was like, I see why this works. You do. Problem is, I was saying to her, Andrew and I both had the same problem of staying on track. So like, thank God she's there with you.
I know.
Slush fund. So I've been following the news on this thinking, is it on? Is it off? What's happening? And I want to start with what's happening in court and then talk about what's happening in the Senate and then wrap up with sort of the Todd Blanche confirmation of it all, as you mentioned. So the court case, as a reminder to listeners, Trump's slush fund came about as a settlement term to resolve his $10 billion, which was insanely corrupt, just nonsense.
And can you just make clear when you say settlement, it's settlement,
and we're both using scare quotes because he set this up himself. Like, he's settling with himself.
You know, Sarah, how much do you think I should settle my $10 billion claim for? Oh, I think I want to settle it for. Well, I think it's meritorious because I filed it, and I'm the only issue here is why not just pick $10 billion? And if it goes forward, it's like, you know, it's just any number he wants is fine. He could have said $100 billion.
It is insane nonsense, and it was structured to make us think that the one point, and it's not just 1.7, it was 1.776 because he thinks he's being cute about it.
And Sarah, doesn't that tells you everything because it's not tethered to damages, right? I mean, that's the whole point of damages, is it's supposed to be a number that relates to how you were harmed from the leak of the tax returns. This is obviously unrelated to that. It's all it, this, but by the way, this relates to why the judge is looking at it, because the reason this wasn't just done privately, the reason this wasn't just, oh, Donald Trump files a letter with DOJ and says, you know what, I was harmed. And DOJ says, okay, I want to give you $1.776 billion. The reason there's this court case is so that it, you all have this illusion of, oh, here's a claim. It went to court. Now there's a settlement. And you sort of have this imprimatur of the court case, so that you will be using language like, oh, there was a court case. There was a settlement. You sort of use words that sound like it's real when it's just like, I was stealing. I wanted to steal $10 billion, but now I'm going to just steal $1.776 billion.
Yeah. Isn't that nice of me? Look how reasonable I am.
That is what the court is looking at, by the way. That's why the court said, this is not, wait a second. I'm looking at whether this is a fraud on the court, because you're involving the court system into this collusion.
Yeah, but here's what I'm, maybe you can help me make sense of, because I know that a bunch of former judges basically wrote a letter asking them to dismiss this, saying, and I also saw, you know, we've got reports that the Republicans are standing up to him on this too. And so it looks like maybe it's going to go away. Although this is the thing that's really bothering me. The money is obviously corrupt and awful, but the thing that bothered me personally the most was the idea that Trump was, for him, his family, himself and his family, making it impossible to be prosecuted ever again by the IRS. That part's still there, as I understand it, right? So can you just break this down for us?
Yes. And then there's the whole issue of what can the judge do?
Yeah.
So based on this quote unquote lawsuit, there was a settlement, scare quotes, and there were two parts to it. $1.776 billion, which was going to create this anti-weaponization fund. That's the thing that Congress was upset about. That's the thing that Todd Blanche said, no, we're not going forward with it ever. And that then also suddenly opens the floodgates for the Republicans to pass their immigration bill. Those were like the magic words, because they were holding the slush fund as sort of leverage, saying, you know, you want the immigration thing, you have to give up the slush fund. So Todd Blanche had to go in, tail tucked between his legs, to say, I know I thought of this whole scheme, but we're going to give up that piece. But that's piece one. That's like, as Mary would say, thing one is the money. That was money that was going to be used for this anti-weaponization fund for victims, AKA criminals. Yet another sort of lie, which is it's going to go to people who are convicted criminals, and we're going to call them victims and we're give them money. And by the way, Congress has a separate statute that they have worked out, which is when there are actual victims of bogus criminal cases, there actually is a law already on the books as to how they can get money. It's not this. More on that later. But thing two was this broad civil release. And I know, Marion, you talked about this. That's staying. So just imagine the president's like, okay, there's two things that I was getting for my bogus lawsuit. One was creation of this fund, but that money wasn't coming to me. And one was this broad civil release. So which of the two did he give up?
Yeah, that's right.
He's like, I'm not stupid. I want the broad civil release. So that piece is still there. And there's two things to know about it. One, that's why the judge in the case still will have jurisdiction and still can say this is bogus, because that civil release is not the product of negotiation. It is, you are on both sides of it. It all seems very collusive and fraudulent. She can sort of still go forward. I personally do not think that's worth the paper it's printed on, in this sense. Donald Trump, while he is president, the IRS isn't going to be doing anything with respect to him, his family, and his companies, period, the end, because he's not going to allow them to do that. I mean, it's not they're not independent, and it's just not operating like a normal process that we have for in any other administration. So it's really a question of what happens when he leaves office. Any rule of law administration that comes in, Republican, independent, Democratic, any rule of law administration can say, you know what, we are investigating this. If there was something there, we think this is not worth the paper it's printed on. Donald Trump or his companies or his family then have to go to court and say, look at this piece of paper, and that will get litigated. I look at this in the world of which side would I want to be on? It's not that it's like there's no possibility of one winning or losing, but I'd much rather be on the side of the government in that situation. And to ask Todd Blanche under oath when this litigation comes up, hey, tell me about the negotiation process of doing this. I mean, and tell me about how you were defending America's interest in signing this. And his claim, he has said, oh, this is just a normal thing that happens. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Not when you're not, this is not a normal release when the claim is somebody leaked information about me. And as a result of that, you're never going to get civilly or criminally prosecuted for any tax liability you, your family, or your companies have. That's not how it works at all. And Todd knows that. And that's, to me, one of the things that could happen in a future litigation. And I think it will happen at his confirmation hearing.
Yeah. So before we get to his confirmation hearing, which I would like to do, I do want to just sit on the future for just a second, because what they do now, right, what they do now and what the judges rule now really matters for the future. And so, like, if you're Todd Blanche and you're on the precipice of getting, of becoming the head of DOJ, do you think that Todd Blanche thinks he's going to have a situation where accountability or a reckoning in the future? Or do you think he will be he feels emboldened to be protected from everything he does now based on the fact that Trump is corrupt and will either like preemptively pardon him or whatever? Like, what do you think?
He's going to get a pardon, and I don't think he's worried about it. Now, I do think that he is, I do think he has said at the CPAC speech he gave, he has said that people at DOJ are worried about their bar ticket and potentially being prosecuted in the next administration. Well, with a pardon, he will not have to worry about criminal liability now, because I mean that's the world we're in, which is like he does not have to worry about that. But that is why the idea that he could lose his bar ticket is something he could worry about, and that is why he has filed about 3 weeks ago a brief in the Jeffrey Clark disciplinary proceeding in DC, a brief that says, and I'm glad you're sitting down, that bar associations where lawyers are admitted to and they have to obey rules should not have any authority to oversee Department of Justice attorneys if they violate their ethics rules. But that takes away that last. So if you're thinking, well, you don't have to worry about criminal liability, well, you might have to worry about your bar ticket, and think about Rudy Giuliani was disbarred. And so that is why that case is, I don't think he's going to win that, but that gives you his mindset that's where he is.
Yeah, I guess there's a part of me, it's not even the cynical part of me, it's just sort of the pragmatic part of me that thinks, yeah, but if you're Todd Blanche, you get to run DOJ. They disbar you. You claim that you're being politically prosecuted. You become an avatar of persecution on the right, and you get paid gajillion dollars of speeches, and you don't give a shit about practicing law again.
That may be right. I do think, you know, I'm enough of a nerd to say, you know, it's still not, you don't want it. It's not like I agree with you that there's like a soft landing and they will take care of their own. And by the way, my heart, I don't take this as like, he would get everything that's coming to him. But I do think that it's not like you wake up in the morning and say, hey, I want to be disbarred.
Sure.
Like I don't care. But you're right that as a practical matter, that it's like he's going to be taken care of. And, you know, he will be a very wealthy man, and he will have, I'm confident. I mean, it's a prediction, but he will get a pardon.
This is just me feeling like, oh, the disbarment comes nowhere close to meeting what Todd Blanche has already done and what he would continue to do. Like, he is one of the most corrupt actors in politics right now. He's been auditioning for this job by making sure Trump understands that he will give him whatever he wants. He will prosecute Comey. He will happily sit and do all of Trump's revenge tour stuff. And so it troubles me when they don't feel like a sense that like the consequences sit out there for them.
Well, it's one of the, you know, as you know, I've been thinking about, you've been thinking about structural issues. One of the issues that unfortunately does require a constitutional amendment is the pardon power is really a terrible thing when it is abused in this way. And that's one for listeners, Congress cannot do anything that in anything meaningful. That's when, you know, the Constitution gives this broad, broad pardon power. And to me, it's one of the things that has to change. The idea that you essentially can be like, commit a crime for me and don't worry about consequences because I can pardon you. I mean, that's sort of the, if that's not being said overtly, it's being said, you know, covertly, meaning that's what people understand, is that I don't have to worry about that.
And I just think, I'm sure our listeners get this, but I do think it is lost on a lot of people how much that the president's ability to behave corruptly, these rules enable that. And then the president now having the broad immunity that he has protects him from like the people that he's letting in the corrupt ways that he's letting off. He can't be held accountable for that either. So you end up with this situation where there's no accountability for anybody.
Two quick things. One, this collusive sort of civil lawsuit, I think would not fall into the immunity decision because it is a personal lawsuit. It is not being brought as in any way as president. And so I think he would not be immune. And there is an open issue about whether a president can pardon himself. And so there is, at least for the moment, there is that potential deterrent. One quick thing about the judge in Florida who wants papers on this and the case has not gone away, is it is not clear exactly what kind of remedy she can really impose. Because one of the things she could do is just say, well, this is collusive and you don't have a case and this, I'm getting rid of this case. Well, Todd Blanche is going to be like, who cares? We wanted to withdraw the case anyway. That was like, we were going to settle the case and get rid of it. So you want to dismiss the case because there's no case or controversy, be my guest. And so the real power she has is whether she can sanction somebody for bad conduct and what that could look like. And so that gets the Bar Association idea back and on the table. That would only be for lawyers. There's nothing really that I think she can't like bring a new criminal case. There's just sort of a long, complicated legal issue on that, but that's an unlikely thing that she would be able to do. So she doesn't have a lot of tools at her disposal in the particular circumstance of this case, because one of the normal things you could do is just refer somebody to a lawyer to the Bar Association and dismiss the case. But the dismissal is like snow in winter because it's like that's what they wanted. So I think in some ways for Todd Blanche, both the referral and any findings that she might make or hearing she might want to have could be the worst thing for him, because it's all going to be coming up in the context of his coming up for a confirmation hearing. And she could ask pretty devastating questions about what's going on. And so I think that the government is going to be doing everything they can to sort of stonewall her and say she doesn't have any jurisdiction. She can't even ask these questions. And if she says I do, them taking it to the 11th Circuit and trying to kick this down the road as far as possible so that none of this is seeing the light of day before his confirmation hearing. So I think there's going to be a lot of what I think everyone up here who listens to this, you know, we lived through Donald Trump using the judicial system and like kicking things down the road so he wouldn't have his day in court. I think Todd Blanche is going to be borrowing from that to try and sort of really get rid of or at least slow walk this so that he can get the brass ring first.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. I want to talk about Todd Blanche's announcement that the fund is dead just briefly. And I know we've been kind of circling that. But first, let's hear from our sponsor, Shopify. This show is sponsored by Shopify. Here's what I've learned growing the Bulwark. You can design the best merch ever. And oh my God, does the Bulwark have some of the best merch, like, you know, the Sarah's Always Right merch or the JVL has a posse stickers because he's not always right. But none of that matters. If your online shop's infrastructure is janky, that's why if you've got a business, you need an e-commerce partner like Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, from household names like Allbirds to Death Wish Coffee to brands just getting started. Get started with your own design studio. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand's style. Get the word out like you have a marketing team behind you. Easily create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. Accelerate your efficiency, whether you're uploading new products or trying to improve existing ones. Shopify is packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. Start your business today with the industry's best business partner, Shopify, and start hearing. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/illegalnews. Go to shopify.com/illegalnews. That is shopify.com/illegalnews. Thanks, Shopify. Okay, so this week, Todd Blanchard announced in a House committee hearing that the DOJ is not moving forward with the slush fund. Like you said, Miriam Court said, this is not a thing, you know, it's not worth anything. You already did that. But so the last question on this, because we've really kind of discussed this pretty thoroughly, though, is that after Blanche made his announcement about not moving forward with the fund, Trump said he likes the fund. So what do you think? Is the fund really dead or is it going to come back? What do you think?
So I think that what's going to happen is we're going to see it dribble out without being called a fund, is that we're going to see, instead of one huge fund, we're going to see claims being made, just like we saw with respect to Michael Flynn, where it's sort of under the radar screen. We may not have even hear of it or know of it. And it's going to just happen more in a one-off way. And this is why, like, Congress really has to step in. They have the power of the purse and they can make sure this doesn't happen and that a judgment fund is not used this way. And can I just, this is where I think it's really important to focus on. Congress passed something called the Hyde Amendment. It's confusing because there is a Hyde Amendment that also is related to a woman's right to choose. But this is a Hyde Amendment, which is, if you are criminally prosecuted and you are acquitted, the Hyde Amendment says that you can get fees and an award from the government, but only if you can show that you prevailed, you won your case, and that's not enough, and that the case was frivolous. Mm-hmm. In other words, sometimes you lose cases to government, but it was not a frivolous case. It was a good case. It just, for whatever reason, it wasn't good enough. So the Congress has actually has a legal scheme. And what they need to do is say, that's the exclusive legal scheme, so that you don't end up with the executive really running a system that is counter to the rule of law. Because when you think about what's happening, these are people who are convicted. This is saying, oh, I, even though I run the government, I am going to say they're not convicted and they're good people, not bad people, and I'm going to give them money. Well, that's not how this system works. If these people have due process, they could make those claims to a jury. They can make these claims to an appellate court. They can try and make these claims all the way to the Supreme Court. But once that's done, it's done. You know what? They are adjudicated as criminals at that point, and they haven't been able to meet the standard that Congress set up. And so the president should not be able to monkey with that. That is really sort of a no kings view, that, and Congress can easily deal with this. That's one where there's a lot of times where there's like, what's the power of the executive? Here, because we're talking about payments that are going out, Congress has the power to say, to put a complete stop to this. In the same way that they could say, the president of the United States cannot sue the government civilly while he is president. If you have a civil case, bring it later.
That makes it. The Democrats did introduce an amendment to the DHS appropriations bill that would block the fund permanently. And they had a few vulnerable Republicans join in on that. But ultimately, it was blocked by Republicans. And I don't have a question for you on this. I guess I'm just interested in your reaction of what went down.
Yeah, I mean, it still may go forward because the Democrats had tied it to the immigration bill then being sent back. So there still is hope. We'll see what happens. I still thought that the bill was small bore. It's like, great, stop this fund. But it's really like, can you please just say the president of the United States, no, any president, not just this president, any president, you don't get to bring a civil case against your own government when you're the one who gets to decide whether it's meritorious or not. All of that has to wait till later. You know, you get lots of privileges as president. Well, this is one of the things that you don't get, which is that there's a downside, which is if you are civilly hurt, you can adjudicate your case, but you have to wait.
Which makes total sense. And it is a reminder of how sort of often Congress and unfortunately the Democrats who are trying to, you know, work in opposition sort of are woefully underreacting to sort of the gravity and the bigness of what the whole thing is.
Right. It's like, it's as a friend of mine would say, they go straight to the capillaries.
Yeah. Yeah. So Todd Blanch is about to go in front of Congress because he's going to need to get confirmed to run the DOJ. He shouldn't be confirmed in any normal world. He would not be confirmed. But let's talk about what it's going to be like to go through a confirmation hearing if you're Todd Blanch.
Okay. So I want to talk to you about something because I really want to know your views, because I want to tell you why I think it's legally relevant, but I want to know what you think about how it might play politically. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's some key things, and I wrote a list. There's the Epstein stuff. There's the Ghislaine Maxwell stuff. There's the slush fund that we just talked about. There's the Southern Poverty Law Center case. But here's the two things that I think could really resonate with members of Congress in thinking about this. Under Todd Blanche's watch, two things happened. One, they opened a criminal investigation and issued grand jury subpoenas to the Federal Reserve and put Jerome Powell under criminal investigation. That got shot down by a federal judge and had, you know, lots of people in Congress were up in arms. Two, under Todd Blanche's watch, six members of Congress who all were in the military or intelligence field, they sought to indict them in DC under Todd Blanche's watch. The grand jury said no. Those six members of Congress were asserting their First Amendment rights. There was no crime there whatsoever. That only makes it worse that Todd Blanche did not put a stop to this. So he can't say, I had no idea. It's his Department of Justice. If I am a member of Congress, I am thinking to myself, wait a second, the guy who I'm supposed to vote on was perfectly happy to do Donald Trump's bidding to seek to indict our members for speaking. And I just saw that there's no loyalty, and I don't have to go all the way back to Mike Pence. I can go to John Cornyn or Cassidy. And so the question I have for you is, I think it's outrageous when I look at it just from my nerdy legal myopic lens. By the way, I know you're going, Andrew, you don't need to say that. We all know that.
We got your lens, man, and it's cool. Yeah, we know. We know.
Yes, exactly. So taking my blinders off and now putting like your big, big reality picture, will that have resonance for the Senate in thinking about who they are putting into this position and what it could mean for them?
Yeah, I think so. I think here's the dynamic in the Senate right now that's pretty interesting, which is that Trump has just worked very hard to take out John Cornyn. He has just worked very hard to take out Bill Cassidy. Like, they are in YOLO and also go F yourself, Mr. President mode, which is actually embarrassing for them, because watching them like completely suddenly understand what the right thing to do is now that they are no longer trying to hold on to their Senate seats is a disgrace in itself. But it does pose an interesting challenge for Trump and demonstrates how he has sometimes he has this short-term thinking, his retribution brain is on. And now he's like, oh, wait, they are going to be in charge of whether or not this guy gets confirmed. And then in addition to that, you've got Susan Collins in Maine, who's in an actual fight for her Senate seat. Now, all the Graham Plattner stuff aside, she is somewhat vulnerable and she doesn't want to take these really like corrupt Trump votes right now, because if she's the deciding vote, because this is the Susan Collins does play votes. They negotiate her vote, right? Like she works with Thune at this point to be like, okay, Susan Collins can keep her moderate positioning by doing this because it doesn't actually imperil the agenda. But if it does actually imperil the agenda, we need her to vote for it and we're going to make her take the tough vote. And so like she trades on that and it's all kabuki theater. Totally. But it's not so much the case with Murkowski. And so I think Murkowski will be against it. She's also not up for election right now. So all of those things are in play. And so I think Blanche has actually quite a tough time in front of him. And although I do think that this is one of those things where I do have to tell you something I thought about you, because we were doing a focus group and we've been asking about the weaponization fund. Ooh, there's like only a couple people in every group who've heard about it. It is not like broken through in this dominant way. Like the way that the Epstein files, people are mad that he hasn't released the Epstein files. That has been durable. That's still in every group. But like the weaponization fund, some people know about it and are like, yeah, it's not great or whatever.
I wonder if that some of this is wording, because if you said, hey, have you heard about Donald Trump sued the government for $10 billion, but now he's agreed to settle his case for $2 billion.
Yeah, but they still haven't heard of it. Like they do not know the contours of this. And this is one of the, I know this, how this is with voters. It's like, it doesn't sound complicated to us at all, but to voters, it's like, what is he doing or what's the thing?
This is why the judge is right to open it. Because you know what she's saying, but you wanted my imprimatur. That what you might be describing is why she's right to ask these questions, because it may be that the veneer of this looking like a real lawsuit, the veneer of this looking like a settlement, and hearing Todd Blanche saying, oh, this is all sort of normal, gets people to be like, okay, well, I'm being told it seems kind of fine.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. This is one of the things that it's underestimated. Yes, voters often don't pay attention to process, but they do know when a judge says, because actually the person in the group who did know about it was like, isn't he not allowed to do that anymore? Like they sort of had this sense. And so that's why it's important to, if you stop it and people have to keep talking about it or understand that he wasn't allowed to do something, that he put it up, people can sort of process that, but it is right. So casual.
I need to focus you on my question.
Sorry, yes.
Six members of Congress sought to be indicted. The grand jurors say no. Todd Blanche, here's the question to you. Why did you support that? And did you think there was a crime there? And how can members of Congress saying something that is true be a crime, and how could you support it? And the grand jury said no, you didn't go back and do it. How could you have done that? Aren't you shilling for the president? I mean, and by the way, the DOJ rule is you're not supposed to have brought that case unless you have a really good reason to think that you could have proved that case at trial beyond a reasonable doubt. Here you couldn't even get the grand jury to vote at a really low standard for six members of Congress. How do we know that you're not going to do this with anybody who's sitting in the Senate?
Is your question, do I think that they should do that? Absolutely, I think they should do that. Or do you think asking if I think the public will care if they do that?
So two questions. Will Republican senators care? Not the obvious Lisa Murkowski, rational, but will they care enough to say, no, this is so irresponsible and it's so bad what you did And then the second question, sort of like the public, but I'm sort of more interested in whether counting noses in the Senate.
Yeah, counting noses in the Senate, I think that that is going to matter. This is what, I mean, because he needs, so they need a majority for confirmation, right? And then you can get J.D. Vance to come in and break that. So you need how many defections? Four from Republicans, right? Collins, Murkowski, Cornyn, and Cassidy. And Tillis is like, and I can find five real quickly. And I bet there's a couple. The Blanche thing is so egregious. There might be a couple more. It would not surprise me at all if Blanche gets blocked by the Senate confirmation. Now, the public, it's tough to put. It's just so funny. My brain just thinks in terms of ads. And so I am sitting here thinking, how do you sort of put pressure on more of the Senate, more of the marginal senators, right? Your wickers, people who are not like out of their mind.
Let me put this, of course, I'm like a real expert at this. So this is, that's my joke. Cause you know, I usually am so like when I'm on air, like Nicole Wallace was always trying to get me to talk about things where I'm like, oh, I'm a lawyer and I don't really know that stuff. But how about this? This is the guy who, after he did a softball interview of Ghislaine Maxwell, had her moved to a camp and is saying, oh, I did it because she was being threatened. You know what happens to prisoners who were sentenced to that amount of time in jail if they're being threatened? They're put in lockdown in the high security prison. And instead so that's the kind of thing.
Get a dog?
She had a puppy. And by the way, this is where Pam Bondi is like throwing Todd Blanche way under the bus. She was asked, she goes, I think Ghislaine Maxwell should die in jail and shouldn't get pardoned. She was like, she's as bad, if not worse than Epstein, you know? And I mean, that to me now, he's got to answer that. And he's going to be like going, his answer, which is, oh, it's okay because she was being threatened. That is the legal term for that. I think I've used this on the show, so it should be familiar to you, is bullshit.
It's the Latin. Yeah, the Latin phrase. I do think even you are, this is the obvious thing to do, is to start running ads in these guys' states, people who are not completely out of their minds or who are vulnerable, and say, because this is the kind of thing Republicans will attack other Republicans over and say, why would you vote to confirm the guy who gave Ghislaine Maxwell the sweetheart deal?
A puppy. Like, gave her a camp. She is a puppy in a camp.
Now you've got the public's attention. I think the weaponization fund, no, but the Ghislaine Maxwell stuff, you're absolutely right. That matters to voters.
Right. And then let him give his BS answer, because that's just, that is palpably not true, because they can look at everybody in the Bureau of Prisons who, when they're threatened, you know what they do? They put them in solitary. It's just going to be like, it's bad what happened. And then his excuse is going to be a lie.
We are going to talk about John Bolton, not the singer, but the guy who was recently indicted. First, we're going to hear from our sponsor, Hers. This show is sponsored by Hers. Between diets, workouts, and endless advice, it's hard to know what actually works for weight loss and what's worth your time. That's why Hers offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications that now includes the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/illegalnews to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/illegalnews. forhers.com/illegalnews. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, go to forhers.com. Another big news story this week, John Bolton, Trump's former national security advisor, is expected to plead guilty later this month in the criminal case Trump's DOJ filed against him related to classified information. What is it? What did he do, Andrew? Is this another one of like he had, I remember when they raided his house, but like he had, it was like Mike Pence and Joe Biden and Donald Trump. They all had classified material in his house. Is that it?
Well, it's worse than that. And obviously for people listening to this, they're going to be like, wait a second. If he's getting charged and he's pleading guilty, what about our current president? Absolutely. I mean, so let's move that to the side, because of course that's a huge anomaly. You know, when John Bolton was indicted, and that was on the heels of James Comey and Letitia James. And one thing I do think that the legal community, the legal commentators, and the sort of public got right is they were not all the same. Letitia James and James Comey, those indictments were exceedingly thin, had all the hallmarks of being vindictive. John Bolton's was different. And, you know, one of the ways you saw it being different is that career people put their names on that. You didn't have this people resigning over it. You didn't have to bring people into the sort of apparatchiks to do Donald Trump's bidding. And as somebody who is in the intelligence community, it's why I feel strongly about what Donald Trump was accused of. But John Bolton was accused of, and the, you know, if the indictment is accurate, and it certainly looked like a bad picture, he had classified information that he was not only putting on unclassified social media. So like he was sending it through like Gmail, but then he was storing it in his house and he was showing it to family members who didn't have clearance. That's sort of the overarching big picture. And for somebody who is the national security advisor, there are low-level people who are prosecuted sort of day in and day out. Ryan Goodman and I wrote a piece when the Mar-a-Lago case came out where we really did a thorough examination of DOJ cases to see what is comparable to what the Mar-a-Lago case was. And low-level people are charged with this all the time when it happens, so that you really can't be like, oh, the national security advisor, it's okay to do it. It's not okay. Now, the one thing we did say and find is that there's something that this country should not be proud of, which is when senior people are charged with this, whether it's like David Petraeus or other people in that role, because he did something very similar, including in his case, lying about it when he was asked about it by the FBI. They plead guilty, but then they get a very, very light sentence. So I can see John Bolton saying, you know what, this case is strong against me. What I did is, you know, stupid and foolish. By the way, I think it's not vindictive in the sense that other people are charged with this who are much more low level, even though I'm sure there was, for Donald Trump himself, I'm sure he's feeling some schadenfreude in terms of what's going on. But John Bolton is going to be able to look at the sentences of other people who were senior people who pled guilty, and they get very, very light sentences, like probation.
But isn't he have like a $2 million fine? Isn't that what they landed on?
He has to pay money, but you know, that's like the least of it. And so what's the reason I'm sort of stressing this is that the way this country should work is the more senior you are, the more responsible
the more trouble you
are.
Get into. Of course.
Exactly.
Of course, you're right.
I mean, that's the way I used to prosecute organized crime cases or executives at companies. Like, you know, the more senior you are in the more you should be held to a higher standard, not a lower standard. And so lower level people go to jail and can do substantial time for this. And it's a deterrent to this. And for senior people, it tends to, the record is not great in terms of the punishment they get. On the other hand, there still is a punishment. I mean, it is still a felony. It's still something that they're pleading to, and they have a record. And yes, they can pay a fine, but I don't think it is a great fact in terms of our justice system, in terms of how we're calibrating culpability.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I agree with that. Before we go, I do want to just quickly get your thoughts on the SPLC superseding indictment. I guess I have one last question, or like one observation on Bolton. Do you agree with this or not? I guess in my head, I've been thinking that it is true that what he did was wrong, true that he should be held accountable, also true that this was vindictive prosecution. Like, do you think this would have been brought if Trump didn't hate him?
I don't know, but the way I look at it is it may be that played a role in why it was brought. But if somebody had come to me and said, and I was a career person, I was never a political, I was just a career person, here are the facts, should this be prosecuted? And I know what the history is of who we've prosecuted. I would be, I'm sorry, this is the conduct and it's the former national security advisor. I'd be like, damn straight.
Yeah, I hear you.
The merits of it relate to, it's not like vindictive and the merits of it don't relate to each other. The more that this is totally consistent with how we have treated people in this situation, leaving aside the giant elephant in the room, which was, you know, Donald Trump being charged but never having to go to trial, leaving that, you know, not even a comparable, it's like worse, aside, I think that it is a righteous case.
Well, do we think that the Southern Poverty Law Center case is a righteous case, or do you still think that's garbage?
Garbage.
Garbage.
Garbage. That's not to say, we talked about this, it's not to say that I think that the policy of the Southern Poverty Law Center to have an informant program, I'm not weighing in on that. I don't know. I'd love to hear why they thought that was a good idea. They don't do it anymore. But like, the jury's out in my mind about whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. That's not what the criminal law deals with. Criminal law deals with whether the Southern Poverty Law Center, as charged, wanted hate groups to succeed, or, as Todd Blanche had to admit, it's true, the Southern Poverty Law Center. I know I said on day one that we have no information. They were giving us information. The Southern Poverty Law Center was giving us information. Well, it turns out, no, of course, they were giving us information. Why? To combat these groups. So that fact is the antithesis of what they're charged with.
And so I saw that the DOJ, so there's two things going on. Like, the DOJ has filed this superseding indictment, which I think is because maybe they think their case is flimsy. And then you also have the SPLC, they're seeking sanctions against DOJ for disclosing to the press an unsigned copy of the superseding indictment, which, again, not a lawyer, but like, giving the media a copy of the superseding indictment does seem like not a thing that happens.
You can give it once it's public. In other words, there's nothing wrong once it's public to have your media office say to, you know, Fox News or Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or MS Now or the Bulwark, do you have a copy? And if it's public, they can be like, yep, here it is. But they gave it before it was public.
Isn't that wrong? Because what it does is it influences the public and everybody else while the case is ongoing.
Until it is sealed, until it is not sealed. And so it is a violation of the judge saying none of this can go out until that time. I don't know what the sanctions will be, but this is the second thing. That, remember, the first thing was, thing one, to use Barry McCord's line, is that Todd Blanche had to retract what he had initially said, and he went on Fox News and said something that was not accurate. And then he had to go back on and say, oh no, never mind, I'm changing what I said. And so the judge on that said, well, I don't need to do anything because he has retracted it, but the prosecutors need to know. And then she lists all of their ethical obligations and you know, so it was one of those things they won, but they really lost. Yeah. But this is now thing two, which is like now they're doing something which is, you know, giving to the press something that was still under seal. I actually still think this is all house stakes for the big picture, which is that they've charged them with something that is the absolute opposite of what the government knows, which is that the government knows that they were given information by the Southern Poverty Law Center to combat hate groups. And that is the opposite of the theory which they have charged, which is that the Southern Poverty Law Center wanted to promote the hate groups. And so that is, you know, for people who care about civil rights, the Southern Poverty Law Center, let's leave the program aside. I mean, their history is pretty remarkable. And the idea that this, if you, this to me is kind of a poster child for vindictive prosecution, unlike John Bolton.
Okay. Well, what's the superseding indictment about? You want to explain that real quick?
It did very, very little. There are little tiny facts that get changed. But one of the things that I and other people pointed out is that they got the law wrong. And they ignored a Supreme Court case from just a year ago that said that it is a crime only if the statements that they made were false. And instead, they said that the statements were false and misleading. But they're misleading wouldn't cut it. If they only made misleading statements, the Supreme Court has said that's not covered. You have to show that they were outright false. I know that for a lot of people, they're like going, people are going, oh, that doesn't seem like a big deal. This falls into the competence bucket in terms of, you know, if I were a senator asking Todd Blanche questions, there's a part of me that would be like, there's the sort of corrupt, complicit, shill questions. And then there's the competence questions. And this falls into the competence one, which is how did, this is like a big frigging deal. How did you miss a Supreme Court case and mischarge, you know, what it is that you have to prove?
Yeah, this is the tough combination. They are both malign and incompetent, which sometimes, you know, I'm grateful for how incompetent they are. Andrew, best-selling author, my friend, thanks for being here this week, man. Guys,
nice seeing you.
You know, it's great that he's already number one on the list, but if you haven't gotten your copy, go get it. We'll see you guys next week with more illegal news. Bye.